Get ready for a second round of red-hot, spicy Alex-on-Alex action. Welcome back to Motorsport 101. We're going all horny on main and we're 10 seconds in. Hi everybody, I'm Trey Harrison. Welcome to episode 273.
You know all about being horny on main, don't you, Dre?
Oh, go... I can't swear yet.
I got you there, Dre.
Now guaranteed to be more sensual than a New Yorker conference call on Zoom. King, don't. What are you doing, King? What are you doing? Put that away.
Thankfully, we don't record the podcast on Zoom, and it's probably for the best we don't. Hi, I'm Dre Harrison, and while the first dissipates from the chat, I can say it's episode 273 of Motorsport 101, and we've got a loaded show this time around. We have the 2020 MotoGP Aragon Grand Prix, the first of a doubleheader at the track, and we got a fantastic Grand Prix. Stop me if you've heard that one before with MotoGP this season. It just keeps on coming. Great, tremendous content. As we had Alex on Alex, and it was Rins versus Marquez, but not the Marquez you're thinking of. Again. Just like Cam and his Honda-related podium bets, you wait a long time and then two come along at once. We'll be breaking that down. A dramatic Moto 2 race, a thriller of a Moto 3 race, and we'll wrap up some bike news as well as Jonathan Rea made yet more history this past weekend at Estoril. And shout out to Toprak, who won a couple of races as well. We'll also be breaking into a lot of some of the extracurricular car news we get into the week as well with a, shall we say... split in the room, potential reinstatement over in NASCAR. IndyCar season finale this weekend, the Barfirst 1000, and the Roval. Need I say more?
The juicy weekend at the Roval.
Yes, Roval is life, Roval is love. With me, as always, is Cam. I'm going to be a dick in the first 30 seconds of the show, Buckley. Hello.
Maybe you simply shouldn't have taken my best player on my baseball team for a bag of chips. I will never not be salty about this on this show.
Oh no, never, never. Because, you know, it's not like the host, one of the hosts on this podcast has a certain baseball team or who may or may not have coughed up a 3-1 lead, which is the new sweep in sporting terms these days.
No,
RJ O'Connell?
Before RJ goes, I will say thank you to the Houston Astros for preserving the record of the New York Yankees being the only team to ever blow a 3-0 lead.
there's a reason I've been sitting like this in correlation to my webcam. I lost. You know?
Yes!
We got beat by the better team. I'm proud of how well my team, my guys, did. It's a shame that it came so close. Without my team, my guys winning it all. But I'm happy for you, in all sincerity, with no snippiness or backhandedness whatsoever. That was a good series.
It was a tremendous series, in all fairness. I thought we were dead and buried at 3-1. I really did. I thought, oh, it's going to be a classic Dodgers choke. We actually came through in the end. Some interesting base running in Game 7 from the Braves, I have to say, which didn't help. But shout out to RJ for being an exceptionally good sport about the whole thing by actually buying a Dodgers cap and wearing it on screen.
It fits me nicely. It fits me nicely. And of course, this morning I went out and did my civic duty. If you have not yet voted, if you've not done your early voting yet in the United States, I highly recommend you doing so.
Please do. Yes, that'd be fantastic. Anything to stop the £250 bottle of ranch dressing from getting another 4 years.
I thought he was a bag of Cheetos dust.
That works too. King, how you doing?
I'm doing okay. Probably the two teams that I did not want to get to the World Series are now in said World Series.
Hang on, what's your beef? Is your beef with the Rays only purely because they beat your Yankees?
Yes, it is.
That's fair.
And my football team's 0-6. Gone through some hard times right now.
Well, I think you just need to fix the problems on your team involving football.
Yeah, like all of it. You know, like quarterback, running backs, maybe both lines, maybe the corners, the coach. The coach who has more career double-digit losses than he has wins, you know?
I think at the end of the day, you should do all that. I think you should replace the GM, maybe the owner, maybe the franchise, maybe replace the state that you're located in.
Okay. Yeah.
The whole shebang.
Can't wait for the 2021 season when...
Guys, we can cut this out later.
When we take the field and the London Spitfires play their first game.
No, guys, we can cut this out later. I just got the report. Quibi is dead.
Oh, shit! Michael Eisner beat Jeffrey Katzenberg! Eisner wins the feud!
Quibi is shutting down effective. It's officially posted. 3:42 Eastern time.
Now we're keeping this in.
We're keeping this shit in. Oh yeah.
It took Michael Eisner 25 years to get back at Jeffrey Katzenberg after their divorce at Disney, and he finally got one. He finally got one. Also, Jeffrey Katzenberg doesn't own a English football team. Michael Eisner does.
You know what? I'm gonna drink to that one. Cheers, everybody.
Cheers. I no longer have to talk about Quibi. So, where can everybody find this wonderful Quibi Slander podcast?
Well, we can't be found on Quibi anymore.
No, clearly not. No, I was just planning another social media like expansion, but no. They're taking the platforms away. They don't want to hear us, clearly. We're on youtube.com/motorsport101. If you're watching us on there, hi, subscribe, hit the bell, all that good stuff. You know, you get these episodes when they go live to the public. We're on facebook.com/motorsport101. We're on twitter.com/motorsport101 as King takes a food delivery in the middle of a podcast recording.
Dog's back.
Yeah. King, what is that?
Like to welcome you.
I have no idea.
Show, eh?
Also, hey Matt, Quibi's dead.
I love this show. We're keeping all of this in, by the way.
This show's gonna run a little bit long. You'll like it.
No one will care. This is tremendous content right here. King, we have our first Instagram highlights. Like this has to go on social media. While King discusses Quibi's death, I'd also say that our personal handles are on the screen right now. They're also in the bio down below on YouTube. But if you're listening to us on audio, we're on at Harrison101HD, at RJ O'Connell, at Ryan Eric Delivery, and at CBuckley917. And our official podcast Twitter is at Motorsport_101. We're on Instagram at Motorsport101Pod, where I demand King puts the reaction of this podcast as our first Instagram video. I need this. Like, I'm at half mast just thinking about it.
I need this. The first highlight of our motorsports podcast being our reaction to the announcement that Quibi, which has no ties to motorsport at all, is now dead.
What about that Idris Elba show where he goes around and joyrides in cars? That's now canceled.
No, what a shame.
Just over 6 months of operation.
Oh, it's delicious.
It
delicious
goes right
content.
In the bin with the Kin phone from Microsoft. Remember Kin?
Anyway, Oh, God. It's like the Nokia N-Gage all over again.
Why do you speak its name?
Exactly. Again, we're on Instagram, Motorsport101Pod, and if you really like us, you can back us financially on Patreon. Patreon.com/Motorsport101. $5 gets you early access to all of our audio shows. You can upgrade to the $10 version for the video versions as well, which also gives you access to the Supporters Club on our Discord server, where you can listen to these shows live as they go out. I'm not going to mention said person by name because they asked us explicitly to keep their name private on this little server we're on, but we had our first ever diamond tier backer at the $20 level.
Oh, shit! Yes, let's
thank
go!
Thank you so much diamond to that person. Tier. They're in this Discord as we speak. Thank you so much for backing us on a stupidly high level. In case you're curious, if you do back us on that level, I'll send you a t-shirt and a copy of The Kick. Because you're stupidly crazy and you deserve to be treated and pitied on as such. So thank you for that. It's incredibly generous. The fact that someone wants to put $20 a month into us is ridiculous as far as I'm concerned. So thank you. RJ's got post-it notes. This could be a very long episode. So thanks for that. Again, all our details on the Motorsport 101 website as well, motorsport101.com. Now, while we all recover from the news of Quibi being dead, I'm going to scroll to the top of this set list and talk about MotoGP at Aragon. So despite a nasty FP3 injury that damaged his hip and put him on a stretcher, Fabio Quartararo actually rode through the pain barrier to take his fourth pole position of the season ahead of Maverick Viñales and another surprising front row start for LCR's Cal Crutchlow. Main title contender Yoann Mir lined up in sixth. Also, he had some drama in Q1 though, as Danilo Petrucci took a toe off Andrea Dovizioso in qualifying. Danilo made Q2 and qualified 8th. Dovi didn't make it in and qualified in 13th. Yikes.
Big yikes.
Race itself, an early hole shot for Maverick Viñales. No, I'm not making this up. He took the early lead from Quartararo, Morbidelli and Jack Miller. Crutchlow was ran out wide at turn 1, dropping him all the way down to 11th. The big winner was Alex Wins, who started 10th and was 4th by the end of Sector 2. Early disaster for Pekka Bagnaia, who crashed early doors. Amazingly, though, this was the only retirement of the entire race. A very low attrition rate for MotoGP standards. Meanwhile, the fastest man on track was Alex Marquez, and he was carving through the midfield, passing Dovi, Tacker, and Miller before chasing down the leading group. In said lead group, Fabio started to struggle. His teammate, Morbidelli, pushing him wide at the final corner, only for Mir to take both of them on the inside at the final corner and go into third. Rins, however, had other ideas and took the lead a lap later and tried to make a break for it, but Maverick Viñales and Yoann Mir would not let him, and now with Alex Marquez clearing the SRT Yamahas, he was now on the back of the lead group as well. Maverick was starting to struggle on his soft tyres, and Mir overtook him into the final corner with 10 to go, and Marquez bullied him off the turn when Apex a corner later to take third. Rins kept pushing to try and get away, but Suzuki's now 1-2 was broken up by Marquez, going the long way around Mir at the final corner with 5 to go. He clawed his way all the way to the front of Alex Rins' bike, but with 2 laps left, he suffered a big wobble at the final corner. Dad Julian Marquez nearly had a seizure in the garage trying to cope with it all. Marquez tried to reel Rins back in, but ran out of road as Rins held on to take his third career win and the 8th consecutive different winner MotoGP has had in 2020, the first time since 2016 we'd seen that. Alex Marquez took back-to-back seconds, and Yoann Mir took third for the championship lead due to another collapse for Fabio Quartararo. An erratic tyre pressure problem running the medium front made his bike unrideable, and he'd finish down in 18th.
So how does this impact the championship standings? Well, as mentioned, Yoann Mir leads the championship by 6 points over Fabio Quartararo in second. Maverick Viñales is 12 points back in third. Then we go back another 17 points. Andrea Dovizioso, 17 points back in fourth. Taka Nakagami is fifth. Franco Morbidelli is sixth. Alex Rins is seventh. Jack Miller in eighth. Paul Espargaro in ninth. And Miguel Oliveira on a very nice 69 points in 10th.
Nice.
If you're wondering, Valentino Rossi was not at this race after a positive COVID test.
Yeah,
we didn't. We hinted at this. Hinted this on last week's show. Yeah, we. It came through the same day we were going to record episode 272, which is going to go up by the time this goes live. We wanted to save it for this one instead, but yeah, Rossi caught the Rona on Wednesday afternoon. It was made public that he had actually caught it and actually had some pretty nasty symptoms. He was one of the guys that did have symptoms from COVID-19, and it's pretty much now on the record that Rossi not only missed this past race, but he's also going to miss the second Aragon weekend coming up this weekend as well. People have been asking, are they going to call in Jorge Lorenzo to replace him, given he's Yamaha's test rider? The answer to that is no. Two reasons why. One is that Yamaha didn't officially withdraw Rossi from the weekend until Friday. In MotoGP, you have to name a mandatory replacement in 10 days. So he could probably work out from the timing of it, because they only officially removed him on Friday. Both races fall within a 9-day period, so Yamaha don't have to announce a replacement, and given the incubation period of COVID, he should be back for Valencia in 3 weeks' time. So,
but you're implying that they could have. They're not forced to have a replacement rider.
Yeah,
they chose not to have one, but they could name a replacement if they wanted to. Yamaha chose not to. Let's just say there's a lot of stories flying around in the media that Jorge Lorenzo isn't particularly fit at the moment. Rossi himself has criticized Lorenzo for not being in great shape and not riding the bike very much.
Wasn't this right before he had the positive test?
Yeah, like within days, he had said that, Lorenzo apparently wasn't taking his new role particularly seriously, as well as reports that now that Lorenzo is no longer having to ride full time, he's, shall we say, enjoying the diet that he wouldn't be able to have as a full-time racer. It's not the first time Lorenzo has reportedly showed up to a race meeting overweight by his standards.
Look, man, Nathan's famous Philly cheesesteaks are very delicious. So, y'all, we watched this. Most of us watched this race together. My dudes, that was a good race. How excellent about race. Alex Marquez proving all the doubters wrong? Because remember, this is a guy who was...
Less!
My man's was dropped two. Before they even started the season.
Two podiums in a row.
Gentlemen, I think Buckley is having a moment down there.
You're goddamn right I am.
Oh, this is a good race.
Go on, Cam. Talk about your mans for a minute. I know you want to. You're dying to. You're chomping at the bit.
Alex Marquez got another lap one of the gods. Was, I think, plus three or four at the end of lap one.
Yeah.
And I hurt my throat screaming about the fucking podium.
Yeah.
And he rode a great race. A couple of us have mentioned it while we were watching it live. You looked like his big brother on that bike.
He did, on the ragged edge, but in control. And yeah, I do find it remarkable that in just I wouldn't go as far as say it's just the last couple of rounds, because Marquez has generally looked more competitive for three or four now. He looked pretty good at Misano. He was not just like 13th, 14th. He was more like 7th or 8th. And I was thinking, okay, maybe he's starting to put this together. But Cam, I'm hearing there's been some changes at Honda that's seemingly made a difference.
Yeah. It's kind of a mix of everything. Of course, we know Alex is a bit of a slow learner, and we expected that when he moved up to MotoGP. That was clearly evident in the first, 7 or 8 races of the season. But as you said, he's been making progress. At the same time, Honda went to an all-new shock absorber for Mullins this year on the rear of the bike. A lot of different changes in moving the setup closer to what Mark usually runs. And it hasn't seemed to really fix the bike, but it's put a leash on it. it's calmed down some of the bike's more violent tendencies, and it means that both Alex as well as Taka Nakagami, who's been great all year on that bike anyways, and Cal in qualifying, they can push without being in fear of the bike. Because if you talk to Cal Crutchlow at the beginning of this year, it sounded like he was scared to ride the thing.
It does, yeah. It certainly sounded like that. It sounded like they were just afraid of going over that Honda knife edge and then giving themselves a whole heap of problems, or picking a bike up out of the gravel, which is, you know, nobody wants to do. By any measure. But
that and Aragon suits the Honda as well, because it's a bit of an older surface, a more abrasive surface. The grippier bikes on the grade can't use as much of their advantage they normally would.
Right. So, yeah, all those factors combined lead into a much improved Honda. I mean, again, Taka's been competitive pretty much all year long. He was up there. Crutchlow was in the top 10, I think, for like, which has not happened with Cal very much this year, particularly in the dry.
He dropped off from P3 in qualifying. I think he had a slipping clutch, he said. Slipping clutch for the first few laps of the race, and it killed any chance he had at a good result.
He bogged down at the start. He was pushed out wide at turn one. He was given the old Lorenzo heave-ho from last year. And as you said, the slipping clutch. It was all just like a myriad of problems for Crutchlow that weren't on him, really. So just one of those things. But yeah, great to see Alex Marquez back up the field. And you know what's funny, King? Looking at the championship right now, he's only 10 points behind the man he's now going to replace him. Ain't that funny?
Yeah, let's keep in mind, Alex Marquez was replaced at Repsol Honda before he ever turned a wheel in anger.
Wild.
What did Brother Ryan say?
Hang on, I'm just getting confirmation on my WhatsApp one more time. Yeah, it was "fuck you, Puig" was the comment that he came out with after that race.
And ain't that
no
the
ifs,
truth.
No buts, no censorships. He went in raw. It was a quote "F you, Puig," for back to back second places for Alex Marquez. I don't know, there's a base reference. One of our Discord players goes, quote, "What did the seal ever do to him?" it was an excellent race. Again, I think he would have had a real shot at the win if he didn't have that big wobble towards end.
He was just out of tires. He was pushing so hard to keep up with the other Alex, the one that actually won this whole thing.
Yeah, Alex Rins. We kind of forgot how good he is in the midst of Joan Mir putting it all together. And oh, by the way, Alex Rins started the year hurt.
He's still hurt. What's he up to? 1.85 shoulders now?
Apparently, he needs. That's all he needs now to be competitive again. And he's still in the top 10 in the standings.
Again, like, this year is so crazy. A man on a Suzuki just won a Grand Prix from 10th, and it barely moves the needle. In the grand context of how crazy this season has been, Alex Rins just won this Grand Prix from 10th on the grid, and it wasn't even nothing. He was plus 6 on the first lap. Plus 6! It was ridiculous.
Yeah, everyone in the middle of the field seemed to get an incredible start.
Yeah, the midfielders were just launched off the line. It was crazy. That was ridiculous. What a display that was. It makes you wonder what Rins could have done with a full season. Because, again, we've talked about Rins before. His race pace is stupendous. Like, he got to the front and he was not passed again. It was as simple as that. No one could stay with him at the limit over the course of the second half of that race. Marquez got close.
It was a stalemate between
them
for a good, three laps. Alex got to him, but just couldn't do anything with him. Alex Marquez.
Right.
We have to clarify, because it was the Alex and Alex show.
Yeah,
it really was the Alex and Alex show. Yeah, Maverick sinking a little bit towards the end on the soft tire. He gambled, but almost got to the back of Mir again by the end of the race, funnily enough. So, like, Maverick having a peak Maverick race. Starts well when he starts well, bogs down in the middle, comes back strong at the end. Vintage
the king,
Maverick.
The king of the hypotheticals.
No kidding. The PSG of MotoGP riders.
You mentioned him in third. Johan Mir, championship leader.
Yeah. Is this more of a case of Yoann Mir rising to his potential and being consistent when nobody else is, or is Fabio Quartararo just bottling this title?
Six of one, half a dozen of the other.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, Mir, we've gushed about him on the show for the last couple months.
Oh, he's legit.
He's here. He's here. He's here now.
Oh, yeah.
Bulletproof consistency, makes moves when they're there, holds station when they're not, and it's netted him the championship lead. Meanwhile, Fabio, and this is a bit of a theme with Yamaha, their tire issues just keep getting worse and worse.
The dogs don't want to hear about it, but, you know.
The dogs don't want to hear about it. They are stout, they're stout Yamaha fans. They're still living in the era of a blue 46 bike, just racking up win after win after win.
So, yeah, I believe it was a last-minute call from Yamaha to run the medium front on Fabio's bike instead of the soft front. And then, apparently, like, Fabio said after the race that the first three laps were perfect. He felt great on the bike, he was fast, he was keeping up with the rest of the field. And he thought this was the right call. And then lap four happened, and apparently he said the tire pressure on the front was all over the place. And it basically made the bike unrideable. He says he couldn't brake, he couldn't steer, he couldn't lean. His pace dropped off like a stone. Yeah, and he ended up finishing in 18th. Out of the points altogether. And yeah, that is what's led to Yoann Mir taking the championship lead. May I just point out, we've had 8 different winners in the last 8 races in MotoGP, and 8 winners in total this year as it is. Yoann Mir leads the championship, and he's not one of those 8 race winners.
It's still our championship leader hasn't won a race. One of the dudes in the top 5 hasn't stood on the podium all year. MotoGP is wild. But we still miss you, Marc Marquez.
Marc Marquez, and I'm sure we'll get to the circuit, the swirling rumors about him in just a bit. But, oh my God.
They never end.
It's just, what do you say about this season? Anything that could happen has happened, is continuing to happen, and we have a guy in his second year who only just grabbed his first podium a few races ago. And now he's got the championship lead.
My dude's Ducati. Is Ducati just imploding now? Have they imploded?
It feels like this is full. I feel if I can use words, I know it's very difficult. It feels like Ducati as a whole is in full meltdown. They can't get the bike to work. Their riders are infighting. The management doesn't know what to do.
Other than that, it sounds great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Other than everything, it sounds great.
Doubling back to the Ducati qualifying incident, because I've got quotes in front of me now from the riders involved. As mentioned, Q1 happens. Dovizioso's leading his way on a final attempt to make Q2. Now, Dovi's had qualifying issues pretty much all year long.
Can't ride this new rear tire the way his whole riding style, the way it's built, he just can't ride the way Andrea Dovizioso rides.
No, like, the Monaco delayed braking, the big heavy turn in, can't do it on these new Michelin rear tyres. He goes on a qualifying run, he's leading the way, he doesn't realise until right at the end, his teammate is drafting off him. Dino Petrucci takes full advantage of getting a massive tow down a 0.6 long of a mile straight. He makes Q2 and would go on to qualify in 8th, Dovi qualifies in 13th and misses the cut. They interviewed both of them after qualifying, and let's see if you can gauge the tone in the room here. Petruk said, and I quote, "Ducati dumped me, so now I'm racing for myself. I'll obey team orders if they arrive. I have to do my best. It's a shame I was dumped before the season started. I'm sorry for Andrea." Andrea responded by saying, and I quote, "I was disappointed because I don't think Danilo did the right thing. He didn't have the speed to be there. I think with the relationship we have, and given that I'm the only Ducati rider being able to maybe fight for the championship, It wasn't a smart move. We have a good relationship because I did a lot of things for him. It wasn't a smart move. Frosty.
Healthy team chemistry.
Can I just say as well, Ducati doubled down and said, Duffy doubled down on Sunday as well, and he said, quote, Ducati have lost control of the garage.
Yeah. This is the year, right? Mark's gone. Yamaha, for how much better they made their bike, they still got problems. This was the year, and it's fallen apart right in front of them. And, you dump a rider, you tell a rider they're not coming back before the season even starts? Why the fuck is he going to ride with the team in mind?
And you're talking about Danilo Petrucci, who's one of the most beloved dudes in motorcycle racing, who everybody loves, everybody knows Danilo absolutely is a team player. We've seen it on the record. Remember, we won at Mugello last year, and he literally turned around and said, I'm good. I'm satisfied. I'll help Dovi win the championship now.
Yeah.
He said that on the record while holding his winner's trophy last year. I cannot get over.
He was happy to get that dub.
Yeah, he just wanted his first win. That's all he wanted.
Think of how bad the relationship with the team must have gotten for it to be at this point. For both of them.
Well, we mentioned it before. Like, Dovi and Delinea has barely spoken for 2 years.
Yeah.
Like,
Dovi's completely fallen out with management, and Petrucci got booted before the season started. What did they think was going to happen?
Right.
That sounds about as stupid as throwing away $1.8 billion in a streaming service that nobody watches.
This is okay, we now need to name this episode the Quibi Slander episode. And just consider as well, Andrea's still not out of this. By the factor of sheer consistency, he's still clinging on to the title.
He's only 17 back. It's more
than 2.
That's
one weekend this year. That's one weekend.
The way this season has been, a good day, you win. A bad day, you're outside of the top 10. It takes one win from Dovi, and he's right back in contention again. Like, I don't know where it's going to come, because, look, we have 4 races left. We have Aragon again this weekend. We have 2 races at Valencia, which should, on paper, go to Yamaha. In theory.
I don't know
if that will actually happen, because this year's been so goddamn crazy.
I think it's Suzuki. Because they can't qualify, but they can keep their tires under them, and Yamaha just can't this year.
You know, I'm just going to throw darts at a board.
Where are you
going
to pass
at
Valencia, though?
I'm just going to throw darts at a board and say Honda's going to take one of those.
Oh, God.
Why not? Oh, it makes as much sense as any of these latest Mark Marquez.
Yeah, you know what?
Rumors.
Fucking Aprilia. Fuck it. Aprilia sweeps the rest of the year. That's
the one prediction that won't land.
Okay. This year has been so insane that I could say Aprilia could sweep the rest of the year. And it would be like, it wouldn't even be top 5 on crazy shit that's happened.
Can I just say, going back to this Quibi thing before we jump to Moto2,
that
the founder of Quibi once thought that nobody wanted to see The Lion King, and that's part of why he got ousted at Disney?
That might be one of the biggest L's that anyone has ever taken in entertainment industry history.
It's one of the biggest L's I've seen in civilization. Like, how do you screw up a $1.8 billion investment? Anyway.
I have one more point to make. We all need to also realize that this dude's dream project was Treasure Planet.
Fine movie in a vacuum, but commercial.
God. Look. I genuinely say this sincerely. This is one of the best races of MotoGP he's had this year. The best in Styria. This was a fantastic Grand Prix. Overtakes and action and tenseness and drama all the way to the very end.
Go out on Video Pass and watch it.
Or watch it on NBC Sports. We can watch it in the US now. And I'll go one further, Dre. I'll say this might be one of the best seasons in top flight motorsport in the last 20 years.
It's up there.
Best that I've ever seen.
This is a historically great season. It really is. Like, this is absolute carnage. One more time. He's the 8th different man to win a race this year. He's the 8th different consecutive guy to win a Grand Prix this season. We've only had 10 races in MotoGP in a, what's going to be a shortened 14-race season. We've only got 4 left. We've got Aragon next week. We take a week off. We've got 2 at Valencia, then Portimao for the finale. This is already shaping up to be like the best MotoGP season ever seen. And I thought 2015 was special. Oh no, this is ridiculous. A season where 15 different men have been on a podium, where 8 Dre, different dudes have won a race.
Dre, it's carnage. I think your next book project is already in the works.
Oh,
I'm just putting that out there.
There's an idea.
The lower class races. There was points in them.
More mayhem than actual quality racing.
Moto 2 was a race of was a race of flashpoints and drama, as far as I'm concerned. Maybe not a classic in terms of watchability, but for shock value and championship implications, this was a doozy. This was a race of holding your bottle. We got a solid 3 holy shit moments here via significant solo crashes. We got an early break from Sam Lowes, Fabio Di Giantonio on the speed up, and Marco Bezzecchi for the Sky VR 46 team. They all broke away in the leading group. Luca Marini tried to catch up until he binned it early doors at the penultimate chicane. Championship leader in the gravel. Not good. So that was the first big shocker. A couple of laps later, DG Antonio is all over the back of Marco Bezzecchi in a fight for the lead, and then DG just loses the front into turn 2. It just slips out from underneath him. It's gone. Bike gets catapulted into the outside turn 2 gravel. Nasty incident. Fabio thankfully okay. But yeah, DG wrecks from second. It becomes a 2-horse fight between Sam Lowes and Marco Bezzecchi. And Lowes takes the lead with 3 to go. And then to start the penultimate lap, Bez has a carbon copy of DG Antonio's. Honestly, you could splice them up frame by frame and it would be virtually identical. Almost the exact same spot. Bez just tucks the front. Down she goes, and the bike gets catapulted into the gravel again, which basically gift-wrapped Sam Lowes a very easy win. Back-to-back wins for Sam Lowes, which is weird to say about a Moto2 situation and Sam Lowes. Back-to-back Ws for the Brit. There was a great fight further on for second between Enea Bastianini and Jorge Martin. Bastianini came out on top of that one, significant for a reason I'll get to in a minute. And shout out to Jake Dixon, who had his career high finish in P4 for the Petronas team. Good news for him, which we'll also get to in a minute. He finished ahead of Remy Gardner in 5th, Marcos Ramirez 6th, who, naughty boy, bumped out Jorge Navarro at the very first corner. Navarro on his back in the middle of the grid on the first corner. It's a terrifying incident. Thankfully, everybody got out of the way. Hector Garzo, 7th. Joe Roberts, 8th. Tetsuya Nagashima, 9th. Corsi, 10th. Fernandez, 11th. Luthi, 12th. Edgar Pons, 13th. Manzi, 14th. And Marcel Schrotter rounds off the points in 15th place. Championship is now very, very interesting. Top 3 covered by 5 points. Enea Bastianini takes the lead of the championship again on 155. Sam Lowes on 153. Oh, God. I'm having terrible flash forwards. What if Sam Lowes actually wins a world championship?
Oh, Christ.
BT Sport will never hear the end of this. Like, they're going to tear their nuts off.
It'll be shouted out from the rooftops. It'll be painted in the streets.
Yeah, the Keith Ewan will be on top of the BT Tower with a megaphone preaching to the masses that Sam Lowes is a world champion. No one tell Rebecca James if it happens, says Vic in the comments from our Bike Live days. Well played, Vic, well played. Luca Marini third on 150. Marco Bezzecchi with his crash, that it could have been even more spicy if Bez had held on to that second. He's on 130 now, 25 off the top. Jorge Martin on 95, but a dramatic race to say the least. Sam Lowe's basically winning a battle of the bottle, which is rare to say about a Brit these days. A very dramatic race. And I know we mentioned this a couple of weeks ago on the show, talking about the SRT might be in a bit of a pickle here regarding what it's going to do with its riders, because we mentioned during Le Mans, is Dixon now too good to drop? Well, the answer to that question turned out to be yes, he was too good to drop, because it was confirmed this morning that Jake Dixon has re-signed with Petronas on another one-year extension with the team, which means McPhee has had to stay in his Moto3 team for another year. Brackets, I promise you, this was not the plan. Close brackets. Simply put, I spoke to Simon Patterson about this, and he said straight up, look, there's just no seats for McPhee in Moto2. It's just the long or the short of it. There isn't a good project for him up there. He's got to stick it out until his age 27 season, which is weird to say.
He's almost at the age limit.
Yeah. He's got two more seasons. He can race in 2021 and 2022. For those guys who don't know, by the way, the Moto3 age limit is age 28. If you're 28 on the calendar year that season starts, you can compete in that season. So McPhee's got two more years in Moto3 before he hits the age 28 limit. I think it's a dumb rule, but, you know, it is what it is. There's no reason why Moto3 needs an age limit. I don't care what you tell me. There are great lightweight specialists out there. That's what the sport was built on a foundation of. There is no reason to have an age 28 age
remember,
limit in Moto3.
These are considered their own championships. These are not explicitly feeder series. They function that way. God damn it, RJ. They function that way. They function as feeder series, but they weren't designed as such.
Very much so. Cal, sorry about that, Cal. I was distracted by RJ's post-it.
That's okay.
I only speak facts.
It's true. Look, real talk. Jake Dixon's had a great season. He's improved rapidly. He's made himself a bit too good to drop in that position. And look, if anyone from BT Sport is watching this, can you please do me a favor? Do not put yourselves in baby oil and stop fapping to this kid, okay? Look, ease off. Take it easy, okay? This is the thing about Jake Dixon. He is an incredibly likable young man. Incredibly charismatic, and like, seriously, he's a dream behind the microphone. He is a media department's best friend. He's the most likable British rider I think I have ever seen. Don't F with him, okay? Let him sell himself. He will gain fans because he's great. BT Sport over eggs the pudding on every Brit it has in the field, and it makes you want to dislike people. Ugh, please don't ruin Jake Dixon for everybody. We Brits have got a likable guy we can get behind for once, and we're going to ruin him by TV media bullshit. Thank you very much. That's my rant for the day.
I've never heard of such a thing in four-wheel sports, thankfully.
No. Never happens in four wheels. Never.
More on that potentially later.
No, never. Look, Moto3 happened. It's a Moto3 race. I say this time and again, we're not going to get into the nitty-gritty because there was just too much carnage. It's a fantastic race. Once again, go out of your way to see it. It was probably the best race of the weekend. It's not a surprise. It's Moto3, for fuck's sake. Go watch it. There was one bit of drama at the end. You may or may not have seen the clip because I think BT Sport did put the full final lap on their Twitter. Unfortunately, I think it's geo-blocked to the Americans. Sigh.
No. But
the main story was Raul Fernandez, who qualified on pole. He looked dominant pretty much all weekend. We thought Fernandez is finally going to get his first dub after all those bad races from pole position. He was under a lot of pressure from João Messias in second place, fighting for the lead. And on the final lap, through the really fast left-hander, the Marquez corner after the corkscrew. Masia went on the green before overtaking Fernandez. Went on the inside. Now, we've talked about this on this show before. By a letter of the law, that's potentially a track limits penalty. We'll have to wait and see, you know, how it goes. I noticed it straight away. I thought, oh, are they going to take a position off him? Because remember, we've been strict about this before. A lot, if you cut track limits on the final lap, it's an automatic position drop, pretty much. I think the stewards deemed that Fernandez had pushed him onto the green and didn't gain an advantage, so they let it go. And Yao Masia went on to win the race. Ahead of Darren Binder and Fernandez in third in the end by the time they got to the finish line about 2 miles later. Romano Fenati fourth, John McPhee fifth, who had to suffer a long lap penalty in the middle of that race. Pardon me. Jeremy Alcoba sixth, and then Arena, Suzuki, Vietti, Foggia, Toba, Tate, Sasaki, Ayagura, again, down in 14th and uncompetitive. I don't know what's happened to him for the last two or three rounds, but...
He's been really far off his own pace.
Indeed, and he's coughing up points. The only blessing for him is that Arenas has not taken full advantage. And Dennis Onchu rounding off the points in 15th place. Championship standings where it stands in Moto3 with four races left. Arenas on 144, Aguro on 131, Cecina Vietti now on 126, Arbolino on 115 and McPhee on 109 is the top five there in Moto3. But Aguro, I know, is moving up to Moto2 next year anyway. I think he's going to the Honda Team Asia team. But yeah, not good on that one. Also, quick bit of news as well to get out of the way. RJ, what are you... Oh, for God's sake, RJ.
I couldn't see it. It's not legible.
I'm having to apologize to an all-elite wrestling talent for the gimmick infringement of holding up flashcards with funny quotes on them in the middle of the show.
Very good, very good. Bit of the news as well. We actually now can confirm from a couple of episodes back as well that Cameron Bourbier from Moto America is going to the America's American racing team in Moto 2 for next year. So that'll be fun to see how he gets on in Moto GP's ladder for a second time. Good to see more Americans making the jump over. A couple of bit more pieces of biking news before we move on as well. We have to say it one more time. Congratulations to Jonathan Ray.
Now
a six-time consecutive World Superbike champion. It was always going to be a long shot for Scott Ray, and he had to have won all three races in Estoril to have any chance at all. That didn't happen, amazingly. As Ray came home in fourth in race one, he took his sixth championship. And shout out to Johnny. Great celebration. Very Avengers. Had a box of rings ready to go, and he pulled out the sixth one to signify sixth championship. They've got they've been taking pages from the Valentino Rossi Book of Celebrations on that one. So Jonathan Ray takes his sixth World Superbike Championship. Shout out to Top Rack. He took wins. He won race one, won the Superpole race. Congrats to Chaz Davis, who signed off his time with Ducati with a win in his final race for the team. Was very dignified in his exit. Said thank you to the team. He had a very nice thank you message written on the fuel tank of his motorcycle in tribute to them. If you don't follow Chaz on Twitter, I recommend you do so, because he's been very funny regarding the situation. I think he mentioned the other day about how he wanted to say, is Ducati's MotoGP team available? I'm willing to clean Dovi's garden, I think, for the right price, which I thought was quite funny. Chaz is taking his imminent sacking with extremely good grace, I have to say. To answer your question in the Discord, Vic, probably is one of the greatest motorcycle racers ever, point blank, in any context, pound for pound, to win six consecutive World Superbike titles, to have 99 Grand Prix victories, is just out of this world. He's blown every record that Superbikes had out of the water. He's the undisputed king of Superbikes. And it's a darn shame that Livio Sippo never gave him that chance in GP, because I'd have loved to have seen how he would have fared amongst Marquez, Stoner, Pedrosa, Lorenzo, etc. Also, one thing I had to mention, shout out to our American friend Garrett Gerloff, third and second in race one in the Super Pole race. So the Americans are something to cheer about in the Discord. Hooray for them. And I have to mention this. There was one major championship still up for grabs. And it came down to the wire, because in race two, Jonathan crashed and had to come back and finish in 14th. Yeah, Jonathan made a fuming error. That never happens. Wow.
It's all right. He already sealed the deal. He's allowed a couple of those.
Like Kawasaki was so unbothered by this, they had Vamos and the thumbs up emoji on their pit board as he was driving past. They did not give a shit, which I thought was just hilarious. Alex Lowe's had a mechanical breakdown halfway through his teammate on the other Kawasaki, so it was down to the struggling Javi Forres to come over the line and seal the manufacturer's championship for Kawasaki by 1 point over Ducati over the line in the end. So Kawasaki were this close to bidding a bunch of, quote, sixth gear t-shirts for winning six consecutive manufacturer's championships in World Superbikes. They'd probably be on the way to Africa right now if it wasn't to Javi Forres on that one. So, well done, Javi, on that one. Glad you came through in the end, because the big boys let you down a bit on that one. Also, big shout-out to Josh Brooks. He won the British Superbike Championship by 21 points in the end over Jason O'Halloran and Christian Eden in the end. Shout-out to them. Looking forward to coming back for that next year, hopefully with some fans in the house.
If we had more
time for the bike section.
Yeah, we'd love to talk more about British Superbikes. We have some car-related news very quickly. There's a lot of stuff we need to get through, including the reinstatement of disgraced free agent NASCAR driver Kyle Larson, reinstated this week. And in another reminder that karmic justice never exists in the world of motor racing, Larson might get the coveted Hendrick Motorsports drive that he single-handedly threw away after dropping a hard RN bomb of the infamous Mazda Madness exhibition sim race on April the 12th. NASCAR continues to prioritize diversity and inclusion across our sport, NASCAR said in an official statement. Kyle Larson has fulfilled the requirements set by NASCAR and has taken several voluntary measures to better educate himself so that he can use his platform to help bridge the divide in our country. Larson's indefinite suspension has been lifted. Under the terms of his reinstatement, he will be cleared to return to racing all NASCAR racing activities effective January 1st, 2021. After his dismissal from Chip Ganassi Racing, Larson told the Associated Press in an August 19 article, "I was ignorant and immature. I didn't understand the negativity and hurt that comes with the world. Brief editorial, no shit." He also explained the measures that he quietly undertaken since the incident to learn more about civil rights issues, making some of his first in-depth comments about the matter in a personal essay published October 4th on his website. In his essay, Larson took accountability for his actions and said that he connected with former athletes Tony Sane and Jackie Joyner-Kersee to work with their foundations and to see the impact of racial injustice firsthand in Minneapolis. He also said he had hired a diversity coach, Doug Harris of the Kaleidoscope Group, and had conversations with black racers Bubba Wallace, J.R. Todd, and Willie T. Ribbs to learn about their experiences. "I want them to know that words do matter," Larson wrote his essay, referencing that he would have to answer to his family as he takes responsibility for his actions moving forward. "Apologizing for your mistakes matters. Accountability matters. Forgiveness matters. Treating others with respect matters. I will not stop listening and learning. For me now, it's all about action, doing the right things, being a part of the solution, and writing a new chapter that my children will be proud to read." And, you know, he's saying all the right things, and it sounds like he's done a lot of the work. But I think one aspect that I think a lot of people are missing is that, yes, Kyle Larson is doing all the right things, but nobody is entitled to going back to liking this dude for a long time, if ever.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like he's putting in the work to be a better person. And look, one less edgy fucking moron using words like that is a good thing. I think we can agree with that.
We can all agree with that.
Yeah. But the fact that this is amounting to an accidental gap year and is now going to a significantly better team as a result of it.
No, we don't know for sure yet.
Everything everything under the sun points to him getting the seat formerly occupied by Alex Bowman.
Who's jumped over to replace Jimmy Johnson. Oh, by the way, we're not going to talk about the race at Kansas. It sucked. Moving on.
It leaves a bad taste in my mouth.
I agree.
And I don't think that bad taste is going
to
leave.
No, I agree. I think back to when Kurt Busch had blown up at like every single NASCAR journalist under the sun and burned his bridge out of Penske and nobody would touch it. And he had to spend 2 years driving for god-awful teams to prove that he really wanted this. I'm thinking I would be more appreciative of that. Don't just give him a reward for bad behavior that he himself admitted to.
Yeah.
You know, if I got in trouble at my job for doing something like this, assuming I was still hired to begin with, I wouldn't be promoted up to executive vice president of the company.
Yeah, he said what he said and fell up in the world.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm not going to pretend like I've got the greatest finger on the pulse in NASCAR. I feel a bit gross just thinking about it, to be honest, because I'm a firm believer in second chances with people. I believe that not everything should be set in stone in most instances. Also, I'm starting to realize that as I get a bit older and sometimes a little bit wiser, some areas need a zero-tolerance approach. And the fact that what the net scenario with Larson could end up being is basically a sabbatical year and falling up. I know in motorsport, for better or worse, talent often trumps all when it comes to comparisons to personality and what they are and what they represent. We've talked about many a person behind the microphone, in front of the camera, behind the wheel regarding that. Karmic justice does not apply in motorsport. It just doesn't a lot of the time. I find it incredibly frustrating that Larson has a very good chance of being rewarded as a net positive compared to where his career was before this incident happened in April, that he would fall up into a top-tier seat
that he single-handedly threw away at the time.
Yeah, he was right. Because I know you said it, you're not really super familiar with the form book in NASCAR. First of all, Hendrick has two drivers currently competing for a championship.
Yeah.
Half of their team is right now, their four-car team.
Right.
And before the incident on stream happened, he was the prime candidate, alongside Brad Keselowski, who re-signed with Penske, to take over Jimmy Johnson's ride at the conclusion of the season.
Right.
And it's kind of not so much a net positive as it is a net nothing.
Yes. And, like, just to give you, like, some perspective on, like, the status of the ride he's taking, he's probably going to be driving the 88 next year, which was Dale Earnhardt Jr.'s last ride.
Christ!
Yeah, there is a rumor that they will not use the 88.
But here's
what's even better. The prevailing rumor is that they will go to the 5, which is the historic Hendrick number.
You're giving him the franchise number.
This is...
Fuck this series. Look. God, Lord. I can't be nice about this anymore. Fuck this. Honestly.
Yeah. It's frustrating.
Somebody put some alcohol in this Snapple.
You know, I hear there's a motorcycle... I know there's a motorcycle builder in California that may be interested in expanding their portfolio in motorsport. If you're wondering who in the hell is going to sponsor this guy...
Stop! Don't speak it into existence.
If I speak it into existence, it won't happen.
I think it will be the HendrickCars.com number 5 car next year.
Yeah, Rick's going to have to pay for this out of pocket because nobody's going to want to sponsor him.
Yep, Chevrolet has already buried the hatchet, if that's the best way to put it. Look, if he gets his career back, sure, fine, what the fuck ever. We kind of expected it when this whole thing happened initially.
You said he'd be back. We said he'd be back. I just didn't think it would be this quick.
Yeah, I didn't think it would be. Like, I thought it was another year minimum. Look, another year.
I come from a two-wheel world where Romano Fenati basically got a six-race suspension for squeezing another man's brake pedal at 140 miles an hour. Yeah. And was
genuinely
back on a
threatening another man's life.
Yeah. I went on a viral. I went on a rant that went viral on video about Santino Ferrucci's bad behavior, and it turned into a promotion. Hell, Luca Corberi could end up in a prime GT3 ride for all we know a few years down the line. Nothing makes sense.
Nothing.
Bad behavior is constantly rewarded. Look, if this really matters to you, go stick it out a year on some garbage team like Go Fast or Premium Motorsport, my dude.
Yeah.
See if you really want it.
Yeah. I preface this with, again, he seems to be putting in the work. He seems to have learned his lesson, but he shouldn't have fucking had to.
Yeah.
And it just leaves a fucking bad taste in my mouth, and that's not going away. That's not going to go away a year from now, 5 years from now, maybe ever.
I say this as a used to be Kyle Larson fan. I'm not obligated to go back to liking the dude. I've got other people I can cheer for, like Bubba Wallace.
Yep.
Right.
And like Christopher Bell, like Chase Briscoe.
Speaking of Bubba Wallace, we heard who his replacement is.
Eric Jones.
Eric Jones. Good to see him get a seat, because judging by Toyota's form this year outside of Denny Hamlin, don't know how much his problems this year have really been his fault, so we'll see what he does.
I'm going to stay in America real quick, because we got the IndyCar season finale coming up this weekend, probably happening by the time you listen to this. You know, there's 19,872 different scenarios for both Scott Dixon and Joseph Newgarden to take the title, but only 1% of those scenarios would result in Newgarden winning the title. If you're wondering how long the odds are.
Thanos Dixon.
So you're saying there's a chance.
You're going to toe this line right into the ground, ain't you?
Look, if there is one thing that historically is on Newgarden's side, Dixon's never won at St. Pete. But Dixon doesn't need to win at St. Pete.
He doesn't need to podium. He doesn't even need to do well.
Eighth is enough, isn't it?
Eighth is enough, and that is if Newgarden gets every available point on offer.
Including pole position, leading a lap, leading the most laps. I'm just happy that Joseph made it this close, and Scott Dixon is one of the greatest IndyCar drivers there ever was.
Let's say, tell you what, I mean, we say every point on offer. Joseph Newgarden is the man who could make that happen.
Yes.
I could totally see
Joseph leading from the front and winning.
Yeah, I can see him getting it within single-digit points, which a few races ago we would have laughed you out of the room over.
Look, I am just glad that it's come down to the two best drivers in the series, as far as I'm concerned, because Dixon has been this destructively phenomenal all-rounder for a good, 15 years now. And now he's just gotten even better at everything but the 500. And Joseph...
He was pretty good there this year, we have to say.
Yeah, pretty good. Yeah, yeah. Takuma had other ideas. But Joseph, again, is now... Joseph, there's a very valid claim you can make as the number one driver in the series now, and has been in and around the title scene now for, again, better part... ever since he joined Penske, essentially.
He's the perennial title threat.
Yeah, and he's won two of them already, and he still has an outside chance at a third. It's crazy. He still has an outside odds chance of defending his championship. So I'm glad it's gone to the final two. It's probably going Dixon's way, but hey, you never know. We'll talk about it on next week's show. So that'll be fun indeed.
Segues into our next segment. We had the Bathurst 1000 this past weekend. The last race in the 2020 Supercars Championship, and Shane Van Gisbergen, on his 12th attempt, finally captured his elusive first victory in Australia's Great Race. equally as important, if not more so, that was the last victory for the Holden nameplate in its very last race. If you're wondering what happened to the previous Bathurst 1000 winner, Scott McLaughlin, he finished fifth in what may very well be his last ever race in the series, wrapping up his third successive series title in the process. If he has indeed finished his supercars career, he ends fourth on the all-time wins list at the age of 27. And even better news for IndyCar fans, he's already on the way to St. Petersburg, Florida to contest his first IndyCar race this weekend. Go get him, Scotty!
We even know what his car looks like. A fantastic livery.
Ooh, it's the Shell car.
Shell liveries, bang.
Also, shout-outs to... occasionally during the Bathurst 1000, they cut away to like a Zoom call of different like supercars super fans having Bathurst Day watch parties with their crew. And at some point during the race, someone got caught with their bare ass out as with their pants pulled down right to about mid-thigh.
Oh, that was hilarious.
I think that is just peak Estrella.
That is peak Bathurst 1000.
I think I make that one, maybe two buns out.
That's at least one and a quarter.
Good to see Holden go out on top. You know, name is as storied as it gets in that series. Shane Van Gisbergen, I wish after the race he just got on the mic and said, "Tomorrow, Engel, up yours." of course, this in the 12-hour race was the scene of the famous "All I've been seeing this week is a lot of mistakes from Shane." Well, he got one back on him.
It's good to see Shane win that race. I don't know.
We love Shane.
Yeah, fair. I'm ashamed that he didn't try and drift it up and down the mountain sections. Although that's a little bit sketchy, if we're being honest.
Concrete walls are a little sketch going that kind of speed.
A little bit sus, as the kids would say nowadays. Briefly catching up on IMSA, because first we had a very soggy, moist, and juicy GT race as part of the festivities at the Charlotte Motor Speedway.
We need to talk about one juicy weekend at the Roval.
I showed Dre the highlights. There was so much juice in that track.
Rained as it has never rained before. Starting off, NASCAR Xfinity. Oh,
so many pileups.
Pile up after pile up after spin after crash after overcooking it after lawn mowing
that ejected like an entire gusher of water out of the grass.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, we had a GT race at night, which that was a great idea. Corvette won that.
I would like to temporarily hand in my Porsche fan card because this sucks.
But not before we get to Petit Le Mans, Michelin Raceway Road Atlanta, one of the crown jewels of the event. I'm ashamed we're not there. But Cam, this race came down to less than 15 minutes to go. Pipo Derani, Ricky Taylor. Acura versus Cadillac, Team Penske versus Action Express, and then
went to shit because they had been going back and forth for 2 hours. The lead battle was within 6 feet from sundown to nightfall.
Genuinely good.
It came down to two moves. One that set the tone and one that ended their chances.
Up the inside of the uphill turn one, Derani just sends it right up and hip checks Taylor almost off the track to take the lead, but Taylor stuck with him.
Yep, Taylor backed out because Taylor knew that if he turned in, they were going to crash. Fast forward about 15 minutes. Ricky gets up under Derani.
Yep.
Sells him the most beautiful dummy you've ever seen. Gets up the inside. Gets alongside. And Derani decides, well, if you're going to pass me, you're going to have to kill me. And Ricky Taylor said, bet.
And they both ended up dying. And oh my God, that is Wayne Taylor Racing's Konica Minolta Cadillac. Holy shit, Scott Dixon's going to win another race.
Scott Dixon, endless. He won this race doing nothing.
Ranger Van Der Zanden and Ryan Briscoe.
joined him. But holy shit, that was a wild finish. And Cam, that was a wild finish. We can give you back your Porsche.
I can have my card back. Porsche wanted him some race. Yes.
Honda's oh my god. Good. Porsche's coming good again.
Porsche. Guys. They had to deal with the Rona. They had to deal with the crashes, the rain, and it came down to the final minutes in a dogfight between Corvette and. Well, the race ended because the 912 Porsche decided to commit seppuku.
Ah, oh, well, you get what you give what you get, I suppose.
Yep. Great race up until that. It's such a shame because that battle between Ricky Taylor and Pipo Durrani was a genuine race of the year, battle of the year contender.
I agree. I bet you by the time this episode's out, they'll have the whole race up on IMSA's YouTube channel. Also, congratulations.
Yep. Please.
Congratulations as well to Nick Cassidy, winner of the third round of the Super Formula Championship at Sportsland Sugo, finishing ahead of his Super GT cohort Ryo Hirakawa in second. Hirakawa extends his championship lead over the field. He now leads Cassidy by 15 points. Naoki Yamamoto, remember him, the Toro Rosso test driver, finishing third for the first podium of the season. And Sergio Sente Camera taking pole in his debut before wrecking after his pit stop on his outlap because he underestimated just how little grip his cold tires would have. But
yeah, cold tires are a motherfucker in Super Formula.
I'm telling you, Formula E fans, get excited about Big Trick Nick.
And I think the best friends are leading the championship together.
You'll love to see it. And Super GTs this weekend. You should probably go watch that by the time you go listen to this. I think that's all the time and Quibi slander we have for today.
No, we're always got time for Quibi slander.
Well, yeah, that part's true. But
what
that's
a pile of shit. That's on that, man. Get that out of your head, Quibi. And I'll be off to the Tampa Bay Rays in a week's time. Right, let's get out of here.
Oh, pipe down, you.
I'm enjoying my game one victory, okay? Mookie Betts got free tacos for everybody. You'll love to see it. Oh, apart from you, Cam.
Doesn't matter who wins, we all lose.
Pipe down, no, Yankees fan.
No, you the Yankees fan. How the fuck can you sit up there and talk about how everybody loses? No. Everybody wins because the Yankees didn't win. Like...
He's just mad that his football team is hitting a current 0.000 percentage.
Oh, it's a delicious percentage. It's the Mendoza line on crack. Right, let's get out of here. We're on YouTube.com/Motorsport101. We're on Facebook.com/Motorsport101. Our Twitter accounts are on the screen right now. They're in the bio if they're on YouTube. If you're on audio, it's at Harrison101HD, at RJ O'Connell, at Ryan Eric King, at CBuckley917, and our podcast Twitter is at Motorsport_101. You can follow us on Instagram at Motorsport101Pod. King, I demand all the juicy highlights from this show. It has to happen. We need footage of you getting a cheesesteak mid-recording. It has to happen. I demand it.
I'm going to need to reheat this cheesesteak.
We did go an hour 15. We did go an hour 15, but it was delicious content. Hopefully this cheesesteak will match that. Again, you can back us financially on Patreon, patreon.com/motorsport101. $5 gets you all the early access to our audio shows, 10 for the video versions, as well as the supporters club of our Discord server. Big thanks to Sock, to Charles, to Sasha, to Joseph, to Vic and Zoe for all watching along. Thank you very much. Hope you guys enjoyed the show. All of our website details as well, motorsport101.com, all our stuff is on there, including a new written piece by me. We're talking about Formula 2's talent problem. Quote, unquote, we're eating the talent. It's I put it into context in that column below. It's a fun one, especially given the latest F1 rumour that dropped about George Russell this afternoon. Because, oh boy, that's going to be a mess. We'll talk all about that on next week's show, where we also discuss Formula 1's return to Portimao. That hopefully's fun, maybe?
It's going to be a lot of fun on Saturday. I don't know about Sunday.
Look, please. I've been wanting to see a race at this track in a series that I actually give a crap about. I'm looking forward to it.
Here's hoping. Hopefully it's a good one. No guarantees, but we could try. All of that, including a whole heap of stories, including Lance Stroll actually having the Rona, and a whole lot more on next week's show. It's going to be highly anticipated. Check it out if you get a chance already. But until then, I've been Dre Harrison. They've been RJ O'Connell, Ryan King, and Cam Buckley. Quibi sucks. So do the Rays. So do the Yankees. I've been Andre Harrison. Thanks for watching. I'm going to talk to you guys next time. Go Dodgers.
Later, y'all.
Bye.
You guys want to start a Quibi replacement with me?
Nice.
One moist weekend at the Roval.